is your ship and you are the captain. Oh, captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think.
Chapter 13, Meeting of Worlds. Everyone is wrapped up in their own escape from the House of Rejuvenation, whether as a victim or a probably scummy customer with little attention to spare for some random rogue cultivator and his little sister-in-law. Zhang Qinghua can't really be bothered to stop anyone else's flight. The closest anyone comes to stopping them is Duan Tianyu, who looks like he's managed an hour's worth of frazzling in 10 minutes, and is clearly relieved to see Zhang Qinghua again. Zhang Qinghua is way too familiar with that, oh thank fuck you're finally here to solve all these little problems popping out of nowhere like flowers in springtime, expression. He receives that expression a lot. Anyway, because Zhang Qinghua's little sister-in-law is not really a fast walker at the moment, he very clearly witnesses the Huanhua Palace sect's disciples' entire thought process cross his face. 1. The furrowed confusion at Zhang Qinghua's elderly company. 2. The sudden eyes-widening, eyes-bulging realization of what must have happened. 3. The, I fucked up so badly, horror. 4. And the red-faced, burning, shamed determination to leave peak Lord Zhang Qinghua and his elderly, junior martial sister, be. Duan Tianyu has very expressive eyebrows, Zhang Qinghua thinks, as the golden-robed disciple scuttles away, possibly to go vomit into a bush or something again. Because, well, it's way easier than thinking that sort of meaningless thing than thinking about what the fuck happens now. I'm so excited to see my big sister again. It's been too long, and I've traveled so far to find her. It's about time, Feng Fanli says again, clinging to his arm for his support as they step out into Lin Luo Town, peering determinedly around the square, where the gathered locals are gawking at the fresh disaster pouring out the fancy doors of the House of Rejuvenation. Where is she? Why isn't she here? She's waiting somewhere else, Zhang Qinghua answers numbly. Not here. She didn't want to wait here. This way, please, little sister. It's not too far. Luo Jiahui cries when she sees her poor sister. Zhang Qinghua doesn't have to say a word, even though his sister-in-law left before Madame Hu and the servants revealed the true face of the House of Rejuvenation, without any hope of misinterpretation. She's too good a dot connector sometimes. Maybe she sees something in Feng Fanli's face, or maybe she sees something in Zhang Qinghua's expression, but either way, she makes the right guess. He sees relief, confusion, realization, and then tears. With a sob, Luo Jiahui rushes forward to take Feng Fanli into her arms, to put her hands on her sister's transformed face and look into her eyes. Feng Fanli is crying too now. Fanli, what happened? Zhang Qinghua's little sister-in-law is shaking, her excited confusion dropping away down a deep pit of fear and upset. I don't know, Dia. I don't know. They did something and it's made me all weak and forgetful, like a sickness down to my bones. Funley's elderly croak is rising, shrill and horrified. They did something to my hair and to my hands and now my face is all wrong. Feng Fanli is soon shaking so badly that she collapses into Luo Jiahui's arms, wailing. Zhang Qinghua steps back, then steps forward to help, even though his personal instinct is to flee from all the sobbing individuals. But Luo Jiahui shoots him a panicked look that darts back to where she was sitting. Ah, Right, of course. Little Luo Bingha is sitting on a step, wide-eyed, holding onto his cloth dolls and his new wooden tiger for dear life. Shang Qinghua drops to his knees in front of his nephew. Ah, has Bingha been crying? Looks like. He looks the boy over, hands brushing quickly through those fluffy curls and fluttering over those rosy cheeks just in case. The system swooped in before the worst could happen, but is Shang Qinghua's favorite only nephew really okay? He's too little for the plot. See, Uncle is back. He promised he would be, and Uncle Shang always keeps his promises. Is Bingha all right? Can he move his arms? Can he wiggle his nose? Please, so that poor uncle knows that he's okay? Luo Bingha's lip wobbles. Then the protagonist launches himself at Shang Qinghua, bawling all over again. Very understandable. It's been a super scary day. The worst family vacation ever, for sure. Shang Qinghua holds his little nephew tightly, as Bingha squeezes like he's never letting go, and feels like crying, too. They're all alive, which is a huge victory, really. Yeah, great big victory here. Finding somewhere to rest isn't so easy. No one wants to go back to the House of Rejuvenation, so it takes some time asking around to find a Lin Luo town resident willing to rent them a spare room for a few days. Bingha won't let go of Shang Qinghua, even when he seems to run out of tears, and Feng Fan Li is even worse with Luo Jiahui. Their little sister won't stop crying, like she's been holding on too long, and now that she's been allowed to lose her grip for only a moment, can't seem to get it back again. Shock and trauma is a hell of a drug. Underneath all of her wrinkles and white hair, between the bouts of hysterical weeping, Shang Qinghua can see a scared little girl wondering what happened. Shang Qinghua ends up taking Luo Bingha back outside so that Luo Jiahui can try to calm her sister down, clean her up, and get her into some new clothes. The protagonist clings to him like a monkey. He's been staring at Feng Fan Li with wide eyes, more often than not, a scared little boy who probably wasn't expecting his auntie to turn out to be an inconsolable old woman. Uncle, why is auntie old? Shang Qinghua really doesn't want to have this conversation. It's a bit complicated. She's, supposed to look younger than that, you're right, but some very evil people cursed her out of selfishness, which is why she's upset like that. The internet probably wouldn't help him right now, but he kind of wishes he had it back anyway, so he could type in, "What's an age-appropriate explanation for scum villains who sacrifice others to cheat their way to eternal youth?" Sure, he doubts that's ever been covered in a parenting forum, but he's sure he could find some hints on how to handle that. He'll take anything. On its own, his brain comes up with stuff like, "Unless we find a way to fix it, your auntie might actually die of old age before she's 17. He can't say that to a child. He knows that much. Luo Bingha, sitting on Shang Qinghua's lap and clinging to the front of his robes, visibly thinks over the revelation that his auntie is cursed. Shang Qinghua rubs his nephew's back while the boy thinks. He really hopes that Bingha doesn't get up suddenly, because his warmth and weight here is definitely helping Shang Qinghua deal with a really, really shitty day he's had so far. Finally, Bingha looks up at him and says, "But Uncle will fix it?" Fuck. Wow, Shang Qinghua's weak heart takes that one hard. It kind of feels like it cracks right down the middle, actually. It's really too much to have his nephew looking at him like he can fix this, like he can fix anything and everything in the world. Like, it's really that simple. Bingha is so cute and innocent that Shang Qinghua absolutely wants to pinch his chubby cheeks and declare, "Of course, your uncle will take care of it. You just leave everything to me." But It's complicated. Eternal youth and returning youth plotlines weren't totally uncommon, but Zhang Qinghua can't think of one off the top of his head that would be viable. Most of them require sacrifices. In fact, off the top of his head, Zhang Qinghua can't name a single one that doesn't require some form of human, or demon, sacrifice. Sometimes it was even mass sacrifice. Achieving immortality through cheats is the prerogative of villains, pretty much. And so, most non-cultivation methods of immortality and restoring youth are suitably villainous. Anyway, even if they decided it was okay to be evil this one time because it was for a good reason, pretty much all of the youth-restoring methods Zhang Qinghua knows are also unachievable, except for the likes of the protagonist and his golden body and golden finger. It's important for the protagonist to succeed where even powerful villains and their hundreds of cannon fodder minions fail. A chump like Zhang Qinghua really has no chance. Uncle is going to try his best, Zhang Qinghua chokes out. Luo Bingho looks too tired to be relieved, but he nods and puts his head back on Zhang Qinghua's chest, like he trusts his uncle's best to be enough here. Zhang Qinghua keeps patting his nephew's back. After a couple of minutes, Luo Bingha abruptly wriggles back and reaches for his little pack. He rummages past his dolls, his tiger, one of his books, and a bunch of cookies, and comes up with a folded handkerchief tied with string. He offers the handkerchief to Zhang Qinghua, who blinks exhaustedly at it. He can't be expected to read his nephew's mind all the time like this. What's this? With his free hand, Luo Bingha tugs out his lip, showing off a part of his gums where the white is barely poking through. My tooth, he says, and holds it out even closer to Zhang Qinghua, clearly expecting him to take it. Zhang Qinghua does so gingerly. Ah, what for? Doesn't Bingha need it? So you can find me if I get lost, Bingha says. Ah, Zhang Qinghua says. You needed hair to find Auntie, but a tooth is good, right? Right. A tooth is very good. Bingha is very clever. Zhang Qinghua ruffles his nephew's hair, then tucks the handkerchief away very safely, before he tugs the boy to lean back against his chest. Uncle will look after it. It feels like a lie. What would happen if he typed this into the internet, too? I can't protect my nephew from the plot that he's going to suffer someday. That I wrote, and I feel really badly about it. Should I preemptively apologize to him? If it helps, it's a trial by fire situation. So afterwards, he'll be so strong that no one will ever be able to hurt him again. He's pretty sure the only response he'd get to a post like that is something like, Bro, that's fucked up. What the fuck is your life? In another life, he followed the rule that a protagonist had to be the most downtrodden wretch possible so that their rise to the top could be even more satisfying, and embittered readers could live vicariously through the hero as he stomped on all the people who'd stomped on him. Airplane shooting towards the sky had made his protagonist's son's childhood a misery, and Zhang Qinghua undid that particular trope. But he can't undo everything else. For all he knows, all the tragedy he poured into Luo Bingha's childhood couldn't actually just be erased and got dumped on poor Feng Fan Li instead. For a man who could technically be called the god of this world, he sure is useless, huh? Luo Jiahui eventually manages to get her poor sister to sleep. After a so-so meal from their host, definitely not worth the money they pay for it, and insists that Bingha could use a nap too. Luo Bingha disagrees, but his mother isn't in the mood for arguments, so the unbeatable protagonist is settled down for a nap whether he likes it or not. Then Zhang Qinghua gets dragged outside for a talk, whether he likes it or not. Luo Jiahui begins their talk by, after finally getting some privacy, sitting down on the ground and putting her head between her knees, which she's totally allowed to do if she wants to do that. She deserves it. Xiang Qinghua sinks awkwardly to his knees beside her, rubbing her shoulder. You can make this better, right? Luo Jiahui says quietly. I can try to find a way, Xiang Qinghua says. His memory isn't perfect, and it's been a while since he wrote any of the words this world was built on, but he made this world, and he knows that there has to be something in it that can make things better. Body swapping, maybe? If he can't figure out eternal youth, then he might be able to figure out something else. Though, all the body swapping plots he can think of off the top of his head also require some kind of sacrifice. Fuck. Why, oh, why did he have to go for an all things have a price and all good things are destined to go wrong type of universe? In hindsight, he totally should have gone for a life is super good, actually, and here's a bunch of free goodies to prove it universe, instead of being a cynical, pessimistic asshole. Cultivating may help, he offers weakly. She's in no state for that. Luo Jiahui insists. Maybe. But legends have it that there are several great masters who began in their winter years, Xiang Qinghua insists. It can't hurt too much. Except it can. It totally can. Luo Jiahui is right that her sister really doesn't seem to be in a mental or emotional state to pursue the benefits of cultivation. Definitely not anytime soon, no matter how many cheats Xiang Qinghua shoves into her hands. An unstable cultivation base can be deadly. A shock to a stable cultivation base can be deadly too. But it also just might at least extend his little sister-in-law's lifespan and open up some more options for fixing her shitty situation. Well, it'd work for the likes of a protagonist or a romantic interest, maybe. Luo Jiahui takes a deep breath, then raises her head. What happened in there? Xiang Qinghua doesn't go into the close calls or the blood and guts, but he quickly explains who Elder Lady Xia was and what she wanted. He explains that Master Gao and Madame Hu had a pair of masks, a demonic artifact, that could take the youth from one person and give it to another. He also mentions that Madame Hu claimed that their donors were willing and compensated, but if they made one exception, then there's probably others. Xiang Qinghua says pessimistically, since all the innkeeper's other behavior towards the sisters is super scummy too, so he's not giving them even a little bit of credit. And getting a yes doesn't mean too much if it's from someone too scared or too desperate to say no. He trails off as Luo Jiahui's expression shifts into something that seems, he doesn't have the words. She was already horrified, but this is different somehow. Like the horrifying thing suddenly got a lot closer. What is it? Before, Master Gao kept talking about how young I was, and that people might treat me more seriously if I looked 10 years older. He said it like a joke, so many times, and I thought he was laughing at it because he knew no one would take me seriously no matter how old I looked, Luo Jiahui says, a distant quality to her voice. He kept asking what I'd do to give my son a better life. I thought he meant more of what I was already doing. Xiang Qinghua has a really, really shitty moment of realization here. It's a strange moment. He can see the logical conclusion his sister-in-law is drawing. He can see what might have happened in another world. After years of quietly wondering why Luo Jiahui was so much younger than he figured she would be. But he's not having the thought himself. He's definitely looking at the thought, figuratively, but he's not permitting himself to actually think it. Because if he lets himself think it, he's going to vomit up his heart, and then he's going to lose his fucking mind. Honestly, he might just do that anyway. He might just go ahead and do that. How can people do that? Luo Jiahui demands hoarsely. Just look at people like they can be used and thrown away, like their lives and every single year of those lives aren't important, like they don't have meaning. Why do they think they're allowed to spend my sister's life for her? Fun Li isn't disposable. She didn't do anything except try to help me. Xiang Qinghua doesn't have an answer besides, people fucking suck. All he can do is offer comfort, despite feeling like he has nothing left to give. He's not sure what it is that alerts him to something being wrong. This situation is already very many kinds of wrong. So many kinds of wrong. But this is a wrongness that's not right among them. It's probably, ultimately, that Xiang Qinghua and Luo Jiahui are sitting on the ground behind someone's house, in the open, even if no one is around in this back street. Xiang Qinghua doesn't want his family's fear and grief becoming anyone's entertainment. He's been expecting one of the Huanhua Palace sect disciples to come running for him any moment now because they tried. They really did, but they can't fucking handle anything on their own. A figure launches itself at them from the rooftops, a flash of red and white in the corner of Xiang Qinghua's eye. He could dodge, but he can't because his sister-in-law is right there. So he has to settle for punching a pouncing demon in the chest and ends up catching sharp claws down the arm going for his sword. One might think, oh fuck, Lady Xia has more attendants? Except there's all the red. There's red and browning bloodstains all down the front of the demon woman's white robes, as well as a bloody line across her throat. Xiang Qinghua's punch to the chest sets her wheezing and coughing like she's dying, fresh blood dribbling from her neck and down her front, spilling out of her mouth and even her nose. One could totally say something clever here like, haven't I beheaded you somewhere before? Except Xiang Qinghua would probably just end up crying something like, how the fuck did your head get back on? Xiang Qinghua's sword shoots from his sheath to his injured arm, and then, with a throw and a great deal of pain, goes through her neck again. Feeling like death breathing down his neck has him recalling his sword and spinning to meet a second revived demon attendant, equally bloody, leaping for his back. Xiang Qinghua has to kick aside her claws. She's anticipating the sword that follows and jumps back, spitting blood. And then Xiang Qinghua's sister-in-law stabs the demon in the back with her knife. He'd like her to be a little less brave, please. Xiang Qinghua lunges for the demon with his sword, but she flips forward over his blade and over him. Very fancy move, very flashy. Unfortunately for the demon, this very cinematic flip also allows Xiang Qinghua to grab a bloodied sleeve from the air with his free hand and yank, because he cares a lot more about living through this than looking super cool. She barely manages to land on her feet, and Xiang Qinghua's sword takes off her head before she can stick the landing. At the same time that a spear slams her body into the house wall and sticks it there, her head goes one direction, her headless body goes another. Xiang Qinghua curses and jumps back, a wave of freezing cold air washing over his skin, and shiver going straight down his spine. That's an ice spear. A third demonic figure drops down beside him, deeply and dreadfully familiar, which is obviously bad. But then Xiang Qinghua spins around just in time to see Luo Jiahui's backup knife driving into Mo Bei Jun's arm, which is, obviously, the worst thing to ever happen in all time in the entire world. Oh, fuck, his sister-in-law just stabbed his boss. There aren't actually curse words for something this bad. Xiang Qinghua isn't a good enough writer to invent the new ones he needs. Mo Bei Jun doesn't exactly flinch, but he does scowl, like getting stabbed is inconvenient to him at best. This is the terrifying difference between cannon fodder minions and the protagonist's OP lieutenant. Mo Beijun's scowl deepens as Shang Qinghua yanks his small, shocked sister-in-law away from the tall demon lord, putting himself between them. Shang Qinghua puts his hands together around his sword and bows. My king, this loyal servant must beg your forgiveness for his sister-in-law's transgression. Please have mercy. He's imagined this fight before, thousands of times, imagining thousands of different circumstances. And very rarely did conditions favor any result but Shang Qinghua getting impaled immediately by the man destined to murder him. Imaginary Shang Qinghua only ever won with a golden finger up his sleeve, or with Mo Beijun being unconscious from poison before the fight even started. He's wondered, absently, what he might do if the demon lord ever happened across his meddling with the plot and took offense. But never like this. It was too scary to contemplate. What the fuck is Mo Beijun even doing here? Shang Qinghua's sleeves are empty, and he won't be able to reach his belt in time. He's always prided himself on knowing when and when not to enter a fight, preferring to err on the not side of things. A person might not win any battles if they avoided them, but they wouldn't lose either. Sure, a person might get a reputation for cowardice, but they'd be an alive coward. This is a fight he couldn't win if he had 1,000 attempts at it. He really has no options here but to beg. Which is fine. It's fine. He's pretty good at begging, right? Except even though he should be babbling right now, he can't seem to figure out how to start. He can feel the blood dripping down his injured arm, wetting the fabric of his sleeve. He can feel Luo Jiahui's hands on his back, feel the slight tremble in them. She doesn't move, though, which is the important thing. He can feel his own heart beating like a mad thing and his head throbbing around his skull. And he can't get a fucking word out. Mo Beijun says nothing, which is characteristic, but also terrifying. After too long without a response, Shang Qinghua can't help it and glances upwards, desperate for any clue. Does he need to start crying? Does he need to throw himself at Mo Beijun's thighs and cling? Because he will. He's done that before. And if Mo Beijun decides to kill Luo Jiahui for mistakenly stabbing him, then Shang Qinghua has exactly one chance to try and stop him. If he can manage to drive his sword through Mo Beijun's heart or throat, forcing all of his spiritual energy into the blade, then maybe, just maybe, he can save his sister-in-law's life. He will definitely die in the process, no doubt about it. And fuck, he never ever wanted to find out whether or not he'd be willing to die for anyone. He still doesn't want to find out. It's supposed to just be a figure of speech. What's the worst that will happen? He'll transmigrate again, maybe? Shang Qinghua's mile-a-minute thoughts come to a screeching halt when he realizes that Mo Beijun isn't even looking at him or Luo Jiahui anymore. Mo Beijun's gaze is turned to the side, towards the back door to the house. What? The back door is open just a crack, with a small figure peering out. Oh no. Oh no, this is the worst thing to happen ever. Little Luo Bingha gapes up at the looming demon lord from behind the door, with wide eyes and an open mouth, small fingers clinging to the frame. And Mo Beijun stares back at him with a frown. This couldn't be any more different from the way these two were supposed to meet. A person can almost hear part of the plot breaking beyond repair. Shang Qinghua's thoughts are a tangled, spinning mess of, oh fuck, how long has he been here? And holy shit, the world is going to implode. And I am never going on a vacation ever again in any lifetime. He feels Luo Jiahui's hands at his back give the slightest push. Only the suggestion of a push, really. And he follows her silent plea without even thinking about it. Shang-Ching Hua abandons his sister-in-law, stepping between the demon lord and the young boy who's supposed to grow up to rule the world instead, breaking the stair between them. He bows again, even deeper than before. My king, please! He can't manage anything more than that. He could vomit out 1,000 requests from the tangled and spinning mess in his head, but he also might just vomit. Serious risk. Very serious risk right now. Everything comes down to, my king, please, anyway.
Shang Ching Hua,
Mo Bei Jun says. Look at me, is what that tone of voice means. Shang Ching Hua looks up. Mo Bei Jun's expression is a frown, but the man has countless frowns, and Shang Ching Hua doesn't know this one. The demon lord is terrifyingly calm for someone who still has a knife sticking out of his arm.
We will speak of this,
Mo Bei Jun says. Shang Ching Hua nods, and with a wave of the demon lord's arm, the one that hasn't been stabbed, a portal crackles out of the air. The demonic energy hits differently with his sister-in-law beside him and his nephew behind him. Yeah, it definitely hits worse seeing Luo Jiahui flinch violently as the air floods with cold and crackles with power. It's a short experience, at least. And Mo Bei Jun is gone, just like that. Like he was never here, almost. Except for, the icy spear still skewering the headless body to the wall. Shang Qinghua's relief is so intense that his knees give out beneath him. He couldn't stay standing if he tried. He can't make sense of his thoughts either, because they're all drowning in sheer gratitude and joy and terror. He's of a perfectly acceptable height, but he's still just one man, and his small heart isn't equipped to experience this much feeling at once. The ding that breaks through it all nearly does him in.
Mission stage complete. The past, present, and future of Luo Jiahui, part 3, Imperfect Immortality. Mission complete. Congratulations.
Ah, fuck. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. He should have realized that something else was going to happen. After all, it's not over until the damn system dings. Shang Qinghua is left with a bad situation. There's a headless body stuck to the wall by an icy spear, its head on the ground, and another head slowly trying to wiggle its way back to its fallen body. One of the demons managed to claw him, and his still bleeding arm hurts like hell. There's a lot of blood. He's dealt with some pretty gruesome shit in his career. This isn't actually the bloodiest scene he's seen, but it's the personal touch here that makes this particular situation extra special awful. His sister-in-law scrambles to force his nephew back into the house, giving him a frightened and bewildered look. He has no idea how to explain to her what just happened. The secrets he's been keeping were always going to come out someday. He's known that, and he's been putting that off for a long time now. But it's too soon. It's way too soon. This wasn't the plan at all. Honestly, the fact that Luo Jiahui and Luo Bingha have both seen Mo Bei Jun feels like a way bigger, far more important mess than the blood. Bodies can just be buried or burned. Shang Qinghua can't somehow unstab the demon lord for his sister-in-law's sake. Why is Mo Bei Jun even here? How is Mo Bei Jun even... A thought occurs. On a whim, Shang Qinghua checks the bottom of his boots and finds thin scraps of paper, caked in dirt, on one of them. Like something was once stuck there. Travel and time wore most of whatever it was away, but there was something there. Like a fucking barcode sticker that couldn't be fully scraped off. Shang Qinghua's rogue cultivator disguise boots are the same boots he wears when he sneaks out of Changchong Mountain Sect. Fuck. He should do damage control. He should get on top of the situation. Except a pair of the Huan Hua Palace sect disciples come running not too long after. All the action has already passed. He can hear them calling for him before they turn the corner. It's Duan Tianyu, and the one Shang Qinghua has pegged as the boy's best friend and second in command. Duan Tianyu takes one look at the bloody mess and goes to his knees in front of Shang Qinghua. Like, his forehead hits the floor hard enough to sound like it hurts. You know what? Shang Qinghua thinks. Good. Master Shang, please forgive us our ineptitude. The other disciple doesn't go down quite as hard, but follows his senior's direction quickly, looking more awestruck than ashamed. What happened? Shang Qinghua demands, though he can already guess a little bit of it. These are the first two demons he killed and tossed into a random room, before he knew that these demons could regenerate. Fuck, he really should have put down a scent blocker of some kind. The doctor, Duan Tianyu says hastily, the doctor who was a guest at the House of Rejuvenation, Dr. Xu, who promised to ensure the bodies did not reform, he put one of the demons back together. What? He put one of the demons back together out of professional courtesy, he said. He claimed that it was vital to study their regenerative properties. Shang Qinghua cannot fucking deal with this bullshit. The other disciple dares to look up. The demon escaped the constraints he placed, put their companion back together, and we only realized what had happened when we found the body of one of the servants, then Dr. Xu injured and unconscious in that room. They explain, way more coherent about this monumental fuck-up than Duan Tianyu. They tried to steal back Demon Lady Xia's body, but luckily we'd already started burning the pieces, separately like you told us to. They failed and fled, swearing revenge. Shang Qinghua made pieces of Lady Xia personally, partly because all the Huanhua Palace sect disciples were too nervous to approach her still twitching body. If his hard work had been undone just like that, he'd be losing it right now. Like, really losing it. Instead, he just closes his eyes and represses the urge to hit his head against the nearest wall. We lost them in the pursuit. Please forgive us. Duan Tianyu begs. Zhang Qinghua supposes that he can't reasonably blame these kids for the actions of an idiot. Especially when he probably should have burned all the demons personally instead of delegating. But only because he doesn't really feel like losing his shit with an audience. He's not really feeling very fucking generous right now. He's going to bill Huanhua Palace sect so hard. Where's this Dr. Xu now? Restrained and watched, the other disciple reports. Huanhua Palace sect will see to it that he meets justice, Duan Tianyu promises. We won't let him get away with such reckless endangerment of others' lives. He'll be suitably punished. Shang Qinghua kind of wants to tell them to just throw the bastard on the fire. You really showed them, though, Master Shang, the other disciple says, sitting up fully now. Shang Qinghua nearly winces when he sees that they're admiring the ice spear in particular. Dongcheng Mountain Sect truly is impressive. Please, how did you do that? Chaonan! Duan Tianyu hisses. Special single-use talisman, Shang Qinghua says. Very rare. Technically, a person could claim that that ice spear is there because of a talisman. Maybe. Duan Tianyu and his friend Chaonan exchange a look, then look at the ice spear. And then Chaonan nods. Master Shang really is prepared for every situation and makes use of all available resources. I will endeavor to follow your example. Shang Qinghua nearly laughs in the kid's face. Instead, he has the Huanhua Palace sect disciples make themselves useful by hauling the bodies back to the House of Rejuvenation to be burned. He promises himself that he'll leave the homeowner here a very large tip for the mess. He promises Luo Jiahui, watching from the crack in the door, that he'll be back very shortly, as soon as he's made sure it's safe. All right, Luo Jiahui says softly. And then we'll talk. And then we'll talk, Shang Qinghua agrees, quickly but still reluctantly, as though all the consequences hanging over his head right now won't fall so long as he avoids actually having to talk about the disaster that just happened. Not here. Not here, Luo Jiahui repeats. He gets to work. After wrapping up his arm and downing a quick miracle cure in case of poison, he makes sure that the bodies of the demons are burned, that Madame Hu hasn't escaped, and that this Dr. Xu character hasn't either. He makes sure that the House of Rejuvenation's records are preserved, that the rooms are properly searched, and that the building is locked down again until reinforcements arrive. He gets so much information from the remaining servants, who are desperate to finally spill the truth, that he wants to throw up with it. He gets introduced to several local officials and determines pretty much immediately that most of them were either involved or somehow bribed to allow this scheme to operate. Shang Qinghua has since sent another message to his sect. A pleasant, disregard the last message that said, help, I'm going to die, but also please still come at once. And when Duan Tianyu's fastest flying shirty arrives there, Huanhua Palace sect is supposed to send Changchang Mountain sect a messenger. Duan Tianyu swears on his life that this time he'll keep a real hold on things until reinforcements arrive. So Shang Qinghua goes back to his family. And he and Luo Jiahui can't actually talk properly, thanks to the presence of Binghe and Fun Li, and the fact that they're still more or less trapped here in Lin Luo Town. This might be a good thing, or a very bad thing. Either way, it's very tense. Luo Binghe has decided that he's going to sit on Shang Qinghua until further notice, and Feng Fan Li is generally restless despite her exhaustion, needing frequent soothing due to nightmares and sudden panic attacks. Uncle, who was that? Luo Binghe demands quietly. Someone Uncle knows from his job. It's very secret, so we shouldn't talk about it, all right? Shang Qinghua says. And that's the closest they come to talking about Mo Bei fucking Jun. Night falls like this. Even Luo Jiahui has to sleep eventually. Shang Qinghua doesn't have much to do besides stay vigilant and review his point gains and losses. Every so often he remembers the fact that Luo Jiahui stabbed Mo Bei Jun, but he's incapable of thinking about that. There were a lot of the usual tiny point gains and losses during their travel. He gained lots of points for successfully completing each stage of the mission, but he also lost a significant number of points for the protagonist nearly dying. He also lost points for Mo Bei Jun and the protagonist meeting each other over a decade too early. Shang Qinghua argues that it doesn't matter so much if Mo Bei Jun just knows Binghe exists, since Mo Bei Jun is a future ally, but he can't really argue the young protagonist nearly dying to some random demon. So far, this mission seems overall a net zero. In the web novel, Shang Qinghua thinks, the villains didn't exist until he wrote them. Same with wives and plot devices and monsters and everything. A famous warlord wouldn't be mentioned until chapter 500. An infamous ongoing feud wouldn't be mentioned until chapter 700. A legendary master and hero wouldn't be mentioned until chapter 900. Setup? What setup? Foreshadowing? What foreshadowing? Things didn't exist until airplanes shooting towards the sky needed them. Sure, this left lots of continuity errors. Shang Qinghua gave up on properly tracking everything pretty early on and told himself that plot holes helped a story breathe. A miracle cure fountain everyone knew about in Chapter 800 probably could have been used to undo the damage of a poison from Chapter 400. A monster from Chapter 600 was supposed to be the last of its type, but then a new monster would show up in Chapter 750. Characters would suddenly have relationships they hadn't mentioned for 300 chapters. Hindsight stuff. That's the nature of serial storytelling being written as it's being published, bro. Since transmigrating, Zhang Qinghua has frequently lamented everyone's unwillingness to wait their turn. Deadly monsters fight for territory because the author had unthinkingly put them in the same general area, and it's terrifying, like watching a crocodile fight a jaguar. Objectively, he should have known that these two beasts might cross paths, being neighbors, but he just didn't think about it, so he's a little shocked. It's impressive how semi-functional ecosystems have been constructed out of his bullshit. Antagonistic demon lords battle amongst themselves instead of waiting patiently and lining up to face Luo Bingho one by one. Ageless demon wives meant to live in the same harem tear each other to shreds instead of waiting for someone to save them. Cultivation sects that never interacted in the web novel have rivalries that exist apparently just to give Yue Qingyuan a headache. Towns get swept up in disasters caused by warring demons and offended spirits and tempestuous monsters, all too impatient to wait for the plot. Zhang Qinghua thinks that a rare bird Luo Bingho was meant to catch might have actually been eaten by accident or something. So either the system is going to have to spawn a new one, or that storyline just isn't happening anymore. It's not his fault that someone or something decided to make a world that can barely manage to exist altogether once realized. He didn't ask for this. Some things just weren't meant to exist in the same space. Zhang Qinghua thinks of the broken, laughing, and crying masks, burning, and thinks miserably. Some things weren't meant to exist at all, you know. Some things were never meant to be real. Deep into the night, Zhang Qinghua's thoughts are punctured by a sudden stab of demonic energy, like a sudden needle to the palm. He's instantly on alert, and a few minutes later, a second spark crackles through the darkness of their room, zipping towards the back door in its 1 second lifespan before fading out. Ah, really? Now? A third blue spark, bolting through inky black, burbling out from the air, crackles insistently just inside the door. Larger than the others. Sharper, with a faint puff of cold. Unpleasant enough to make Luo Jiahui turn over in her sleep with a discontented murmur, like a cold snap of the fingers. All right, now! This is happening now, apparently! Zhang Qinghua quickly checks the defenses he's set up around their rented room, then slips out the back door. A different Lin Luo town big fish, almost for sure a corrupt one, sent around some of their servants to clean up the mess earlier as a nice gesture. They missed a few bits of blood splatter, though, and the, hole from the ice spear. The darkness of past midnight definitely doesn't help the new super creepy vibe here. Another blue spark flickers across a rooftop. Zhang Qinghua follows. He follows the trail to an isolated alleyway that looks like it's used solely by serial killers, where a full portal yawns open like the mouth of a monster. He steps through, enduring the wicked cold of that unstable space and out into... This green forest looks like it might not be too far from Lin Luo Town, actually. Which is good, since the portal closes again behind him. Zhang Qinghua was kind of expecting to find himself on the edge of a cliff over an icy, churning sea or something. Somewhere convenient for Mo Beijun to dangle him off of. Somewhere suitably cinematically dramatic for a confrontation of this magnitude. But this is nice. This is fine. Mo Beijun isn't there at first, which is terrifying. But then the demon lord steps out of a second portal a moment later. And actually, his presence is much more terrifying than his absence. A single piercing look shatters the dam, holding back all the worst-case scenarios Zhang Qinghua's brain has been unhelpfully spitting out. Zhang Qinghua bows again, quickly, partly because he can't bear to make eye contact. If he chooses the wrong dialogue options here, this could end with the world imploding, maybe. No wonder his throat feels like it's full of glass shards. It's time to tally everything he has to offer to appease the Demon Lord and, in doing so, maybe save the world. My king, thank you. Thank you for your intervention earlier.
The situation was in hand,
Mo Beijun says. He doesn't seem angry that Shang Qinghua's sister-in-law stabbed him in the arm, which is probably good. Except, back when Mo Beijun still did the whole physical abuse and threats thing, sometimes he'd randomly lash out at Shang Qinghua, even when he was apparently in a goodish mood. Even when Shang Qinghua thought he'd done well and that the Demon Lord ought to be pleased. Years later, Mo Beijun doesn't hit Shang Qinghua, even when he's obviously furious, but, still. I have medicine, Shang Qinghua begins.
Unnecessary.
Of course, I would never dare to cast aspersions on my king's strength, Shang Qinghua agrees quickly, able to see at least that Mo Beijun has since removed the knife. I only wish to make amends. May I ask what business my king has in the human realm? Might this servant be able to offer his assistance in the matter? Was it Elder Lady Xia?
The cursed immortal is not welcome in the north. She has been a guest of the Bai clan in the west for the past 3 generations.
Ah, yes, of course, Shang Qinghua says, like he totally knew that. Yep, totally knew that.
What business did the cursed immortal have in that house?
She wanted a demonic artifact that had fallen into the hands of the human innkeepers, my king, which she believed would restore her youth. Shang Qinghua says quickly, the artifact has been destroyed. Elder Lady Xia and all her attendants have been beheaded and burned.
You killed them.
Well, not all of them personally, Shang Qinghua protests weakly. But, yes? This conversation is not going how Shang Qinghua expected. Does Mo Beijun care that this villain character is dead too early or at all? He's nearly entirely certain that Mo Beijun isn't here because of the demons. Though it would be kind of convenient if Mo Beijun had just been here to kill the demons, because Elder Lady Xia had offended his father or something. It feels a little bit like they're circling what they actually have to talk about. Until Mo Beijun abruptly says,
the child, is he your son?
No! Mo Beijun's expression is impassive, which makes him appear disbelieving. No, my king, he's not, Shang Qinghua says, because Luo Bingha really isn't, unless he counts author god technicalities. He's my nephew.
A foundling.
Shang Qinghua actually winces at that because, oh, fuck. How long exactly has Mo Beijun been watching them if he knows that? Shang Qinghua and Luo Jiahui don't do anything to hide the fact that Luo Bingha is adopted, unless a person counts not making an effort to tell every stranger they meet. And that's come up constantly ever since they set out to reunite with his fake sister-in-law's family. Yes, my king.
The son of your sister-in-law.
Yes, my king.
Who has never met any member of your family.
Shang Qinghua actually closes his eyes here, because, really, fuck. When he and Luo Jiahui have been under the impression they're alone, they haven't hesitated to discuss what manner of relationship they might present to her family. No, my king. Shang Qinghua starts weighing the benefits of claiming that he has a deceased sworn brother, but he and Luo Jiahui have mentioned her shitty ex-lover, too. Even if the Demon Lord has only overheard one private conversation, it's probably been made crystal clear that Shang Qinghua's relationship with Luo Jiahui has nothing to do with any brothers he might have had and any lovers she might have had. Mo Beijun's gaze is unbearable. He doesn't even have to say the next question.
Why are you protecting a woman to whom you have no relation and her foundling child?
The question hangs over them, even without words. However, since Mo Beijun hasn't actually asked it yet, Shang Qinghua stays uncooperatively silent. How the fuck can he spin this? He came up with a bunch of in-character-ish reasons when he first meddled with the plot, and now every single one of them is fleeing his inhospitable mind. He had excuses. He had lots of excuses. What Mo Beijun says next is actually worse than that next question.
There is something about the child.
Shang Qinghua still hasn't opened his eyes again yet. He shuts them tighter.
Something more than human.
Mo Beijun says. Shang Qinghua has been keeping a sharp eye out for demonic qualities, just in case. And he hasn't seen anything concrete in 5 years. And yet Mo Beijun can just tell? Well, why not? Why the fuck not? It's probably because Airplane Shooting Towards the Sky once said something about the protagonist's lieutenant being able to see something different about this half-demon who crawled out of the Eternal Abyss to challenge the future Northern Demon King. Something that the character of Mo Beijun could not give name to, because fuck actually having to describe that sort of mystical gut feeling, but which nevertheless warned him to be wary and take this fight seriously. Something that made the protagonist seem extra impressive and his powerful lieutenant super astute compared to the cannon fodder, who almost always dismissed the protagonist and then paid the gruesome price for that.
Shang Qinghua,
Mo Beijun says. Reluctantly, Shang Qinghua looks up at the demon lord, who's pretty much standing over him now. In all ways but physically, Shang Qinghua is totally being held off a high cliff over an icy churning sea right now. Fuck. The child is half demon, my king, he whispers. Mo Beijun doesn't look surprised, as though the only remotely surprising thing here is that Shang Qinghua actually admitted it.
And why would a human cultivator harbor a half demon foundling?
Shang Qinghua takes a deep breath. He's an innocent child, my king, who doesn't deserve to be punished due to the enmity between humans and demons. The forbidden relationship between his birth parents is not his fault. Mo Beijun's piercing gaze, as usual, doesn't abate.
Why would this human cultivator harbor this half-demon foundling?
He rephrases, inconveniently insightful. A man who knows that Shang Qinghua is too close to this little family, has gone too far out of his way for them, for this all to have happened due to simple duty. Like they both know Shang Qinghua wouldn't have done this purely out of ideals or compassion, out of the sheer goodness of his heart. He's the bastard son of Tian Longjun and the late head disciple of Huanhua Palace sect, Shang Qinghua admits, through the ringing in his head. Partly figurative ringing, out of fear, and partly the literal ringing of a disapproving system. It's not that bad. Fuck off, system bro. If Mo Beijun secretly knows from the beginning that the protagonist is a heavenly demon, then he has more reason to ally with him later. So long as the demon lord leaves the protagonist alone, until then, oh fuck, oh god, please let Mo Beijun leave little Luo Bingha alone until then. This character is supposed to be super apathetic like that. Mo Beijun actually looks surprised. At least, surprised for him.
A heavenly demon half-breed, he says.
Yes, my king.
He favors his human side.
Yes, my king.
The strength of mixed children is unpredictable.
Most often, yes, my king. Combinations of demons and humans, and of human-like demons and totally not human-like demons, aren't too rare, with all of them existing in the same space, able to meet each other and, experiment, if not fall in love. And yes, some pairings aren't so compatible, and the offspring are, there's not a good word for it, really. Unpredictable is actually a really nice term compared to the other things that are said about half-breeds. Even with powerful demons, sometimes all that power gets twisted up into knots, and their poor, misshapen children really can't belong to either world. But the protagonist is the perfect combination of human and heavenly demon. He inherited the best of everything. Still, Shang Qinghua isn't about to say, "My king, that 6-year-old is going to grow up to kick your ass someday."
"What purpose does this servant have in seeking out the son of Tian Longjun?"
"Curiosity, my king?"
"Curiosity."
"This servant considered the potential political leverage in both worlds at first, but he... I regretted..."
"Regretted?"
"Regretted the fact that this child lives in a world that will be cruel to him through no fault of his own." Airplane shooting towards the sky. The man at fault says,
"A heavenly demon cannot live a human life."
Shang Qinghua really, really doesn't need to be told that. Perhaps not forever, my king, but he still might be given a childhood free of struggle and training in human cultivation until he comes into his powers, he insists, like that'll somehow make up for the shitty, unnecessarily dramatic path ahead of the young protagonist, like he's trying to tell himself it will. Someday he'll be rejected, out of ignorance, and have to fend for himself in the demon realm, it's true, and it would be cruel not to prepare him for the dangers ahead. Mo Beijun is silent for way too long. Sometimes Shang Qinghua thinks that the demon lord does this just to fuck with him like this, until he's ready to take off from anticipation stretched too far. This was a mistake. This was a mistake.
"You are attached to this child,"
Mo Beijun says finally. "Yes, my king." Mo Beijun falls silent again, before he says,
"There are many services which have yet to be repaid."
A total non sequitur as far as Shang Qinghua is concerned. He's too confused to think to reply, which appears to annoy the demon lord enough that his next statement is even more confusing and also terrifying.
"A demon child belongs in the demon realm. What would you do if I commanded that the child be released into the demon realm?"
Shang Qinghua can't think of anything to say except, "My king, he's 6! Even if the protagonist wasn't accidentally killed by one of the many local horrors, the rest of his childhood would surely be filled with suffering. He's mostly human, with his demon heritage sealed. He'd smell human to them. He'd never survive in the demon realm. He's too little."
"Then let the child go to his human parents' sect,"
Mo Beijun says. "To the Huanhua Palace?" Shang Qinghua chokes out. "If they ever found out that he was part demon, they would never allow a part demon child to live. They would punish him for his parents' every offense."
"What if I do not wish for my servant to harbor this son of Tian Longjun?"
"I cannot abandon him, my king."
"Even if I command it?"
"I can't."
"So, if I commanded it?"
Shang Qinghua stays silent. Rebelliously silent.
"Shang Qinghua."
"I wouldn't," he admits, so quietly and so hoarsely that it can barely be heard.
"You would choose this child over your sworn service,"
Mo Beijun says, actually sounding angry. Oh fuck, he looks angry. He was looming before, but now with cold air pouring off him, demonic chi buzzing around him, it's 1,000 times worse. Shang Qinghua should say something clever here. He should say something appeasing and apologetic. "He's my nephew," Shang Qinghua says. Instead, weakly, "I can't just abandon him." Though it looks like he's going to accidentally end up abandoning Luo Bingha anyway, if Mo Beijun follows through on this and takes him out of the story before the plot's even gotten started. Damage control, damage control. If he sends Luo Jiahui and her family into hiding and never visits them again, then he tells Mo Beijun that he sent Luo Bingha away to Huanhua Palace sect or something. That'll work, right? He can probably pull that off. All right, that's a course of action. If Mo Beijun insists, then Shang Qinghua can make it work. But then Mo Beijun's scowl abates suddenly, and the looming calms down again. His anger seems to evaporate just like that. And he's looking at Shang Qinghua in a new way, as unreadable as ever. Like, maybe he's found inner peace in contemplating how he's going to kill this disloyal servant as painfully as possible. My king, please.
I do not command this,
Mo Beijun says. Shang Qinghua looks directly up at him, confused and terrifying and... Oh, fuck. Mo Beijun was testing him? Was that a test? Holy shit, that was probably a fucking test. This asshole!
There are many services which have yet to be repaid,
Mo Beijun says. Like, that's supposed to make any more sense the second time around. Like, Shang Qinghua is going to be any better at understanding that after the fright of his life right now.
Yet the servant asks for nothing on his own behalf. Perhaps if he will not accept payment on his own behalf, he might ask for protection for his half-human nephew and his family.
Shang Qinghua cannot fucking breathe.
Would the servant make such a request?
Mo Beijun presses lowly. The demon lord steps closer and seems to expect an answer. The servant might, if he was permitted. Shang Qinghua chokes out.
Then let him ask.
This feels like a trap, except it doesn't. It feels like a trap turned inside out. My king? Shang Qinghua says.
Ask,
Mo Beijun says. Shang Qinghua sinks to his knees, bowing deeply, and says quickly and obediently and so desperately. My king, this servant would humbly request that you grant your protection to his adopted nephew and his family. Please.
Granted.
And it's a good fucking thing that he's already on his knees. Otherwise, he'd fall over. Which is really inconvenient, because the next thing Mo Beijun does is tell him to stand up again. My king, stop it with the games, he could wail, if he had the breath for it. Shang Qinghua is supposed to be a peerless immortal, but everything resembling grace escapes him at the moment from the sheer shock of what's happening. What the fuck is happening? Mo Beijun ends up grabbing his arm, the non-injured one, to pull him up. The shock of getting what seems to be a helping hand doesn't help Shang Qinghua's balance in the slightest, actually. But for a demon lord of Mo Beijun's strength, supporting Shang Qinghua is clearly effortless. Once he's on his feet again, however, Mo Beijun still doesn't let go. He just keeps on holding. The grip is cool and firm, but not painful. Not even a little bit. Shang Qinghua feels like he could float away without even a breeze, but Mo Beijun is immovable.
When the human realm rejects him, and your nephew must take sanctuary in the demon realm, he may come to the northern kingdoms.
Mo Beijun says to him,
a heavenly demon, even a half-breed, can be fostered. He may make a good servant or an ally, if he is raised to know that demons are not his enemy.
Mo Beijun lays out his future so matter-of-factly that, for a moment, Shang Qinghua could almost think that not even the system could argue with him. Mo Beijun decrees it, and so it shall be. Just like that. And how nice that future would be. No eternal abyss at all. No need for the protagonist to struggle through the demon realm, being constantly tricked and betrayed thanks to knowing nothing about demon culture or politics. If he has his guiding lieutenant and greatest ally from the very beginning, that's an almost peaceful transition. Shang Qinghua wants that future so badly that his chest aches with it. My king, I can't thank you enough.
Good service and loyalty must be rewarded,
Mo Beijun says. Like, he didn't totally start out thinking that Shang Qinghua was a sniveling, scummy wretch and a worthless coward who would never amount to anything meaningful. Which was, honestly, a fair assessment of the situation at the time and of Shang Qinghua's general character. Like, it's actually that simple. Thank you, Shang Qinghua says again. Mo Beijun inclines his head and actually looks pleased. Almost. His other hand comes up to hover over the bandages on Shang Qinghua's injured arm before he releases Shang Qinghua entirely. He doesn't step away just yet.
I will not retaliate for your sister-in-law's mistake,
Mo Beijun says. Thank you, my king.
However, I will expect even greater service in the future in order to make up for it and this long-standing deception.
Of course, my king. Thank you for your graciousness.
Should a loyal servant discover further requests he might make after he has made up for his mistakes, he may ask.
It takes Shang Qinghua a full 5 seconds to understand that statement, which just doesn't seem like it's a possible thing Mo Beijun might say. The demon lord who loathes humanity, letting his untrustworthy spy know that he can ask for things, indirectly suggesting through an expression that's actually an expression and also actually a vaguely positive expression that he might grant those requests. This can't be what happened in the original story, unless it totally did and the original Shang Qinghua took that generosity way too far. Thank you, my king, Shang Qinghua says, dazed.
We will speak of this further.
Of course. Mo Beijun sends Shang Qinghua back through a new portal soon after that, sending him back to Lin Luo Town. And Shang Qinghua actually ends up going through the portal backwards. Probably not a great idea. It's probably important to look both ways before stepping into a rift in space. But he can't bring himself to look away from the demon lord staring back at him, feeling like there's been another shift between them, maybe the greatest one yet in all the long years they've known each other, and one that he definitely doesn't understand.